the North Star for us is always, it's like, what's the percentage of sold as liquid state? There are some metrics about like TVL or dominance or whatever. Like I care less about that. I care a lot about how much of that sold is liquid stake. Many people don't stake their sold. Like there's still like 33% of the sold not being staked, and that's crazy. And so like this represents to me a tremendous missed opportunity to try and convert this sold to stake sold, because that, you know, earns them yield and also it helps to secure the network. So that's my North Star.
Before we get moving on today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself, my co-host, or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in the episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or any other advice. Okay, let's jump into the episode. All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Lightspeed. You got to bear with me this week. I'm in the middle of a move, so we're coming live from a new random corner of the house. But we're joined this week by Sanctum and FP Lee. So FP, thanks a ton for joining us. You guys are building a really, really interesting protocol on Solana, and would love to get your expert view as to how do you define this? How do you define what Sanctum is and what problems it's trying to solve?
Right. I mean, thanks for having me on on such short notice as well. So I think the goal of Sanctum, we've been talking about this, and really we're trying to build what we're calling the infinite LST future. And that sort of encompasses a couple of ideas. One is, first and foremost, that I think most SOL should be staked, or maybe all SOL should be staked. And then of that SOL, most, if not all of it, should be liquid staked as well. Right. The second thing is that there should be a lot of reasons for you to stake your SOL, over and above, just earning the yield from staking your SOL. And so we want to give you 1,000 reasons for you to stake your SOL. And that means sort of, you know, 1,000 sort of different LSTs, each with their own sort of purpose. So, you know, be it supporting art or supporting public goods, or, you know, just, you know, getting extra yield, right? These are all options available to everybody. And so that's kind of what Sanctum is doing. We're building the infrastructure and we're building this infinite LST future.
And that's a perfect tagline when one of your flagship products is, of course, called Infinity. And talk to us a bit about what this product is and kind of how it differs from other LSTs. And then we can jump into the second core product that you guys have, of course, working with partners to launch their LSTs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Infinity is not, it is an LST, but the special thing about it is like it's an LST of LSTs, or it's a basket of LSTs. So it's an index fund of LSTs, however you want to call it. But the idea is that, so if a normal LST usually holds a stake account, right? Or a bunch of stake accounts in the case of a stake pool like Marinade, Jito, etc. And the Infinity pool is the first ever LST that holds other LSTs. So in Infinity, it's holding Jito Soul, Jito Soul, B Soul, you know, etc., as well as the validator LSTs, which we'll get to in a bit. And this basically allows it to be an Infinity pool, right? That earns the, you know, the average of the combined staking rewards from all the LSTs that it holds. Plus, it allows any kind of swaps in between them. So if you want to go from sort of M Soul to B Soul, right? You know, if the Infinity pool has both these assets, then it can service a swap. And of course, importantly, it allows you to service any pairwise swap. So if you've got 100 LSTs in them, right, then you have like 100 times 100 different swaps, right? Like you can sort of any pair between the 100. And this is like a big sea change compared to regular AMMs, because regular AMMs have two assets, right? And so if you want to support 100 different assets, you're going to have to spin up like, you know, 1,000 different AMMs. So the idea of Infinity is that it is a single pool that allows all of these LSTs to be in the same pool, and it allows swaps between any two of them, which then makes it the most capital efficient AMM possible for an infinite LST future. Yeah.
So are the assets held in the pool actually sitting on like some AMM curve? And thus when you like swap between them, does it like favor the liquidity or the depth of one of the assets in the pool?
Right. So the way we don't have a curve, and we don't use an Oracle price, right? Because the key insight is that all LSTs are like semi-fungible in a way. They all redeem down to stake SOL, right? And so that gives us, for every single LST, a floor price for how much this LST is worth and will be worth, you know, at some future date. So that basically, just taking the ratio of one LST to another in terms of sort of stake sold value allows us to calculate for you the fair price. And this price is sort of invariant for, you know, no matter how much size you swap, because they're always going to be sort of 1-to-1. That's the special thing about LSTs, right? Now, it's not, this isn't the case for a stable swap for USDC with USDT, because actually one of them can depeg. You never know, right? But here in this case, we have this infallible on-chain oracle that tells you how much, you know, stake sold you're going to get for the LST. And that is the sort of key invariant that we use. And, you know, having this sort of key invariant allows us basically to do basically zero slippage swaps, right? I mean, obviously we charge a fee, but you know, the slippage, you know, the price that you pay does not need to increase with the size of your swap. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And how does this change like the risk assumptions there? Because, you know, you mentioned, of course, USDC and USDC can both kind of depeg. And the difference here being LSTs in the Solana ecosystem all tend to use the same core contracts, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Talk to us a bit about how that changes the risk assumptions, because if you did price them at 1-to-1, like what actually changes?
Two key risks, like smart contract risk when it comes to Infinity. One is, of course, an exploit in the actual smart contract, right? You know, and that's always going to be there, you know, for any smart contract. And the second one that's unique is that obviously if you have an AMM, that holds a basket of assets, if any one of those assets sort of depegs for whatever reason or just, you know, gets exploited, then, you know, it can be drained, right? The entire pool can be drained. So that's the risk. And so many people have asked us, okay, well, if you're going to be an Infinity pool and you're going to have all these LSTs, all it takes is for one LST to be compromised in order for the whole pool to go down. That's kind of true, but not exactly true. And I'll explain why, right? Because as you said, In reality, even though there look to be like 100 different LSTs, most of them, I think every single one of them except Marinade Soul runs the same smart contract, which is the SPL sort of, smart contract, the stake pool contract. So it's the exact same code. There might be different deployments of the contract. So like the multi-sig is held by different people, but, the actual smart contract is the same. So it's as though you kind of had an AMM with two assets, realistically, the Marinade asset and then the sort of the SPL asset, right? And so it doesn't matter how many new LSTs we add to the pool as long as they're only using that initial contract. Now, of course, if we started to add a new LST with a new contract, now that would be a huge risk and that would be something you'd have to manage very carefully. But we don't do that, right? So the marginal risk of adding new LST assets that use that same deployment is zero.
Yeah. So because the risk there is quite small or near zero, do you like broadly accept any LST that is using those same contracts, or is there still some sort of like, whitelisting feature?
There's one consideration that goes, besides the sort of smart contract risk, you can be holding an LST that's underperforming, right? And for example, there are LSTs now which hold 0% APY, right? Which give you no yield because the yield is directed to public goods or to fund a team or something like this. And these are sort of legitimate LSTs, right? And of course, there are also LSTs that could at some point be malicious in that sense that sort of taking your staking returns. In a general case, the Infinity pool needs to make sure that it has a right balance between sort of being able to service all of these LSTs, including the sort of poorly performing ones, whether by design or by accident, and making sure that there's not this overweight of these poor performing assets so that the entire Infinity pool just gets dragged down by a, 0% asset, right? And so we have a couple of ways to deal with that. One is, an economic sort of, we can tweak the fees for every pairwise asset. So if you have, an asset that is sort of low performing for whatever reason, right, we make it expensive to sell it to the pool, and we make it cheap to buy it from the pool. And maybe it's even free to buy it from the pool, right? And so in this way, right, like arbitrages as well as sort of, market dynamics will make sure that there's a tendency for that asset to sort of go down over time. That's a way in which we can rebalance via tweaking the fees, right, for every pairwise asset. The other thing we can do, of course, is a manual rebalance, because as I said, you know, at the end of the day, they all come down to stake accounts, right? So what we can do is we can take the LST, we can unstake it, unwrap it, get the stake account. We can unstake that stake account, restake it to a better performing LST, or just move the stake account, etc. So there are ways in which the Infinity Pool can maintain a sort of healthy allocation.
My friends, big, big news. Blockworks is hosting Permissionless 3 in Salt Lake City this year. So we're heading west for 3 days starting October 9th. Permissionless is our industry's premier DeFi event that brings together crypto natives from all over the globe. I've personally been the last 2 years and can honestly say that the attendees are incredible. It's people who actually care about crypto. We'll also have more than 200 industry titans speaking at the event. And this includes builders like Lucas Bruder from Jito Labs and Brian Pellegrino from Layer Zero, or investors like Kyle Samani and Joe McCann, and even elected officials like Representative Tom Emmer, who's fighting the good fight in Washington. And it's narrative season, so we're going to be covering the 7 hottest themes in crypto. This includes things like modularity and restaking, or Bitcoin and L2s, and even AI and crypto. The goal is to keep you up to speed on major developments in the industry. Ticket prices will be structurally increasing over time, so get your ticket today. For my Lightspeed family, I got you. We're going to use code LIGHTSPEED10 in all caps, no space, for 10% off your ticket. All right, everyone. I look forward to seeing you at Permissionless 3, and let's get back to the show. And can some of that rebalancing be done like algorithmically? I think it's Jito's pushing out their StakeNet idea, which is really, you know, trying to use Solana as the database to hold a lot of the validator performance history, and which kind of enables you to do sort of exactly what you're talking about, is like once you bring this data on chain, you can do a lot of this like algorithmic auto rebalancing. Is that something that is possible today? Or if not, is that something you guys are looking to add in the future?
It's possible. And I think everything that we are doing is like really what we're only caring about is that price of stakes all over time, right? Of course, there are two issues with that, right? One is that, you know, doing it automatically on the chain with StakeNet is great. And we are sort of actively trying to work with Jito team to do that. The question is how, right? Like, it's more a normative question, right? Which is that how much is too much, or, you know, that like, what is this algorithm? Because I think about Infinity not as trying to maximize the APY at all costs. Like that isn't what we're trying to do, right? Of course it earns sort of staking yield and trading yields, and we want that to be high. Of course, otherwise people don't want to hold it. But I see ourselves also as, you know, waving this flag of like, you know, this is the LST future, infinite LST future, like come join us. And I think, that is perhaps sometimes opposed to maximizing APY all the time. For example, right, you know, maybe with like a public good project like ISOL, right, the Cubix ISOL, that is like a LST that gives you zero return. But, you know, maybe there's some case for saying, okay, maybe Infinity like puts in some token amount, like 1,000 SOL, right, or 5,000 SOL, or, you know, whatever the amount is, right? And yes, it's taking like a hit on that, you know, 5,000 SOL, but perhaps, you know, that 5,000 SOL makes a big difference into that ecosystem, right? It can encourage more LSTs to come in, right? And you just sort of like push this future forward. So there are these like tricky normative questions that I think Infinity needs to tackle. It isn't just like, because at the end of the day, you know, us LST, like, you know, here at Sanctum, we're trying to push this vision of the LST. We're trying to make staking better, trying to make Solana better, right? And so like that is perhaps the best way to do it, is not by maximizing APY at all costs, but rather to do some of these things that maybe drop APY a bit, but get us outsized returns in sort of adoption or, you know, mindshare. Yeah.
That brings up a pretty interesting conversation around like, how do you define, you know, good validator performance, right? It's if there are these like very quantitative metrics, like, you know, yield, uptime, commissions, and those are like easy to measure, but there's a whole bunch of like qualitative aspects, like, and maybe the client you're running, if, you know, they want to promote client diversity, or even the opposite of like, oh no, we really want to promote people on Firedancer once that comes live, or something of that nature. Like, how do you guys think about the more qualitative side of these other additional factors? I know you kind of touched on one being, you know, maybe they're doing some like public good funding, but like what other qualitative factors are there that, you know, you kind of have considered to be like, all right, you know, this is probably a good validator, even if their APY isn't maybe like the max yield maximizing.
I in general, right, the question is who's pushing Solana forward, right? Who's a good actor in the space? Like, who's pushing Solana forward? There are validators who run, for example, 20 different chains, right? And there's nothing inherently wrong with running sort of validators on 20 different chains, but it's kind of like, how much time can you really spend on Solana, right? As opposed to if you run a validator with like Solana and two or three chains, or if you're a maxi, right? Like, you know, that's just sort of like the fact. And there are a lot of validators who make it like a business, and they're very professionalized and very, like, it's like, you know, again, nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong, but it's just like, you know, how much can you care if you have your attention split between all of these chains? You know, that's one we think about. I think the other one is very hard to measure, right? So you have someone like Santetsu, right? Who is like, you know, he's always on the Discord. He's very concerned about vote lagging, right? And so on and so forth, right? Actively participating, right? Validators came together, do validator governance, right? Passing votes and stuff, right? Organizing conferences, right? A lot of this is like, you know, how you can't measure it. It's not something that you can, measure. It's not something that shows up on the, on the metrics at all, right? And you know, as you said, sort of like client diversity and so on, right? But at the end of the day, I think one really needs to make a judgment call about what, you know, who is genuinely here and, you know, trying to push the network forward, as opposed to treating it as a job or seeing it as free money, you know, things, or just like opportunistic and mercenary. So I think that, like at the core of it, that's the key. Yeah,
that's kind of a perfect segue into the second project that, or the second product you guys offer, which is kind of like providing the infrastructure for partners to launch their LLC. So you guys are working with about 20 partners now, through the likes of, you know, Jupiter, Helios, Bonk, and Drift, and a bunch of others. Talk to us a bit about what this offering is and how you launch these partners, or how you help these partners launch their own LSTs.
Right. So the first step we did was to build this sort of base layer infrastructure, right? So the promise is that any LST is able to be swapped for any other LST with minimal sort of fees and slippage, right? And on this, you know, basis of the, you know, the liquidity layer being done, that then paves the way for all these new LSTs, right? And so I think the idea is that, given that the cost of LSTs become so low, like the marginal cost of spinning up and maintaining an LST becomes so low, there's no fixed cost, because previously you had to have like millions of liquidity to fund sort of your AMM. Otherwise your LST was basically useless. It wasn't liquid at all. Now that we've solved that, it means that anybody can sort of spin up an LST without, you know, having to have this massive cash outlay. And I think, the product we offer is really just, you know, projects come to us, or we go to projects sometimes, right? Projects come to us, or validators come to us and says, hey, I would like to set up a liquid staking token. And, you know, like these LSTs can take all sorts of different forms. The most basic one is the single validator LST, which is a project runs a validator and the LST sort of delegates exclusively to that validator, right? So this is like the lion's share of it. But as I said, we've also seen, and I'm really personally very interested in launching all these new kinds of LSTs, right? Things that aren't just, stake pools of single validators, but, for example, like ISOL funding public goods, PathSOL, you know, whitelisting sort of, an unruggable NFT. And then a couple hours ago, I launched FPSOL, which is the first, personal LST. Just a proof of concept, but the idea is that everybody, like you and me, can have their own LST. And when someone buys that LST, that's directing sort of the future staking yields to you. And I see this being very useful for authors, artists, you know, right? You know, all kinds of sort of creative or creators, in general. Yeah,
I definitely wanted to ask about FPSOL. I was poking through the docs and the site right before this pod, and I saw that. And it's even token gated to a private Discord, which is pretty cool. Like, do you expand on that a little bit? Because you mentioned artists as well. And so it does kind of feel like the token gating side of that is potentially like a cool use case. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah. So the core insight really, and this is only possible on Solana, is you want to abstract the LST away from the validator, away from the stake account, right? And so, you know, most people think of staking as staking to a validator, which is true, right? But then when you have an LST, what that is that validator is completely abstracted, right? Like it's like at the end of the day, which validator it delegates to, it's almost irrelevant. What you care about is that where do the staking yields for that LST go to? Because that's a completely different, where the SOL is staked is, it's that base layer, but where do the staking yields go to is a different question. And so with these personal LSTs, what you can do is that you basically abstract that layer down and you decide, okay, which personal LST do I buy? Means who do I want to direct my staking yields to, right? And this is just like a, it hasn't been done before on Ethereum, on Solana, right? And just like having this idea of separating where the stake is staked and where the staking returns go just sort of includes like a ton of different use cases. Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty interesting. So in the case of the FP Sol, then what does the bottom layer then look like? Like, are you running the validator behind that, or are you like, is it getting delegated elsewhere?
Exactly. So the FP Sol is delegate. So basically how it works is on the base layer, it's delegating to a validator. And right now it's delegating to Lane Validator, who is a personal friend of mine and I trust him, right? But, it could be anyone else, right? I've just chosen that guy, right? But on the top layer, what that does is that I've created the LST and I've taken like 100% take rate, right? Which means that all of the fees go to me instead of to you, right? And I can point any arbitrary wallet address, like where it goes. It goes to my wallet, right? So what that means is that at every epoch, when you get your staking returns, they go directly to me. Yeah. So that's how it works, right? And the token gating, of course, is just one, like, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to give someone a reason to hold your token. And I think, maybe that, for me, right, there's the utility. I've deliberately made it very minimalist because I do not want people to ape into the FP Sol. I said there is no airdrop, there is no secret alpha, there is no Wonderland, there are no points, right? There is zero. Please do not expect like a single cent of monetary return to come from holding FP Sol. And that's kind of like, I mean, in part because we don't want to be accused of like self-dealing, right? Like that's, but, right, as an influencer or as an artist or as a creator, the sky's the limit, right? You can offer any kind of thing that you want, right? Private Telegram, private Discord, token gated. You can offer, I don't know, OnlyFans if you want, or sneak peeks to your new albums or music, diss track. I don't know. Like it's up, like the point is that you know who holds, right? And for how long you decide what to do with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Social tokens have long been this like crazy idea of using crypto for some, real world aspect. And we haven't really seen them like hit that inflection point, but this is yet another interesting iteration on it. And I'll go ahead and underscore for that for you though, that this is just an experiment. So don't go aping into this thing. But you also mentioned something interesting at the beginning of this question, which is the idea of liquidity for LSTs, right? That is very much an unsolved problem, or formerly was an unsolved problem, right? If you look at, the largest liquid staking protocol is Lido, of course on Ethereum, they spent tens of, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on token incentives, driving liquidity towards staked ETH. So one of the things you said was, you solved it. Talk to us a bit about why you solved it. I guess that, that kind of ties back in the original product, but yeah, walk us through why it's solved.
Yeah. So to answer this question, I hope you don't mind, we have to go like way back, right? We have to go way back to 2021 when I first started sort of working on Solana. And at that point in time, in 2021, Solana had basically just done sort of like liquid staking wasn't a thing. And so the first sort of initial draft of a smart contract had been written, and they had asked people to help with, helping with dashboards and so on for the new liquid staking things that are going to happen on Solana. I went there and I realized like, oh wait, actually there's this exploit, that exploit, and like, maybe we can help a little bit with this. And so one thing led to another. But initially we were going to do a dashboard for stake pools. We realized that there weren't any stake pools. So maybe we should run the stake pool before we think about a dashboard for stake pools. We started running a stake pool. And at that point, Jito hadn't didn't exist yet. So it was Marinade, and then it was Lido, and then there was us, which was Soshin. This was back in August 2021. And I think we made a mistake, but we didn't launch our token early. I didn't want to, right? Because Marinade and Lido had their very sort of, you know, it was like a big duopoly. They were fighting it out, duking it out for this liquidity. Basically, you know, incentivizing Saber pools and so on. It was like the Saber wars, right? And I was just looking at my stake pool at the time, and I was like, well, this is dumb. You know, I don't want to play this zero sum game and let Alameda, you know, farm all of our tokens away. This is very silly. And I was just thinking that maybe there's a better way, right? Maybe there's a better way. And so, instead of thinking about like, how do I win this battle? Like, you know, and in which case it would be launch the token, incentive very heavily, try and fight for a piece of that pie. I was thinking like, maybe there's like a way in which we can actually solve this problem by the root, right? And then like the key insight really, as I said, is that, you know, all these stake pools are all wrappers around the same stake account, and that when you unstake, when you do a, the way that the program is written is that when you do an instant unstake, when you do a withdrawal from a stake pool, you get the stake account, right? There in Ethereum is different because you have this sort of withdrawal queue and so on, right? So you don't actually get your SOL until, you know, the withdrawal queue comes out. And that leads to a huge winner take all dynamic because you can't compose upon it, right? But here in Solana, it's very different. You get your stake account like this, right? You get, when you withdraw, you get the stake account. You don't get like a ticket, you know, you don't get into a queue and so on. You get your SOL right away. And that insight led us to create what is, called Unstake It, which is basically a naked pool of SOL, right? And that allows all the, you know, it basically, when you come in with MSOL or when you come in with ST SOL or SCN SOL, it does a withdraw, right? It gets the stake account, and that stake account is then like basically interoperable. And then you can sort of put it into SOL, right? And
just to underscore that one as well is, so you get the stake account, but the SOL is still staked, right? Because if I were to like then withdraw from the stake account, I do have to like wait till the end of the epoch, correct?
That's always the key
difference is then you can own the actual staked portion. Okay,
yes, very, and that's the key, right? And so that gave us the idea, which is that instead of trying to solve liquidity for my stake pool, maybe I solve liquidity for all stake pools. And I was thinking, well, this whole idea of an Orca pool is very inefficient because number one, you know, if you have like an MSOL SOL pool, right, half of that asset is not really being used. And why do I say that? Because, you know, if you care about an MSOL SOL pool, and usually it supports two kinds of swaps, SOL to MSOL and MSOL to SOL, right? The problem with that is that when you want to go from SOL to MSOL, you don't need the pool for that. You have already a way to go from SOL to MSOL in infinite size with zero slippage. It's called staking into the pool, right? And so that part of the AMM doesn't make sense, right? And then of that SOL, it can only again get the MSOL part, right? And so I was thinking, what if there was this massive pool of SOL, just SOL, right? Not MSOL anything, because again, right, that leg is not important. What if there was a naked pool of SOL, right, that accepted all of the LSTs, right? And so that was like the precursor, that was Unstake It, which basically allows any stake account, right, to be entered into the pool, which also, you know, then extends to allowing any LST, right? Because again, LSTs reduce down to stake accounts, right? So that was the idea of how we solved liquidity on that base level. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's super, super interesting. And so once you have this new level of liquidity, that, because one of the questions I was going to have is, you know, like, all right, so Helios, you know, Mertz, co-host of the show, so we'll use him as the guinea pig here. They just spun up their LST. I think they have like 250,000-ish SOL, last I looked. And so my first thought is, okay, well, that's great. But like, you know, let's say I was a lending protocol and I wanted to integrate this thing. Like why, you know, a huge requirement there is liquidity. So does this model then like still make it useful in a, you know, like a DeFi Legos composability context, given that there is still a way to get liquidity on these assets?
Yeah. So that's the thing, right? So before Sanctum came about, right, if you had 250K in HSOL, right, and you then have to kind of incentivize 25K at least of of HSOL, right? At least, right? And 25K, how much is 25K HSOL? So it's like a ton of money. It's like for like 25K, like 5 million or so. I mean, it's a couple of million dollars, right? For a sort of not that big, LST. And obviously, you know, as it scales, you have to scale linearly. Otherwise, sort of like no lending protocol will integrate you and so on and so forth. And of course, I mean, if you are a tokenless protocol, right, or you just don't want to give your token, you know, to do this, then you sort of like you're up shit creek, right? So the idea of having this naked, this naked soul pool is that anybody, right, it doesn't matter if they have their own liquidity or not, they can just spin it up and they can borrow this liquidity, right? So that's like the base layer. But also, and this is a little bit more technical, so stop me if, you know, I'm going sort of too deep, is that if you've got, because you have now this infinity, right, it's like even if that sort of base pool runs out, right, you know, we've got, I think now we have about 210K into that naked soul, the sanctum reserve, we call it, right? It's a reserve pool. But even if that route is not available, you can go from HSOL through infinity to maybe JitoSOL. And we've got 400K we have 400K in JitoSOL in infinity, right? And so you can go from HSOL, right? Swap it to, you know, 400K of JitoSOL and then borrow JitoSOL's liquidity, which is very deep because they've been incentivizing it for God knows how long, and you know, and so on, right? And so you can also borrow MSOL's liquidity and BSOL's liquidity and etc. And so this is the key. Every single LST is able to borrow the liquidity of every other LST's liquidity, right? That is not just the 200K that is, you know, like that reserve, but it's like if JitoSOL has like 2 million, you know, soul of liquidity, great. It means everybody can use it. And that's like, you know, that's really cool.
Okay. So there's like two layers to this, right? There's the infinity, let's call it the infinity pool, which you can swap the like LSTs through this pool that both, because they all use these same stake pool contracts. And you can also, or stake accounts contracts. And then you also have this like lower layer, which is the reserve. How do we?
But the key is that when you go, so here is when the hop comes in, right? So it's not just that you're swapping your HSOL to JitoSOL in size infinity. It's that JitoSOL soul pools are heavily incentivized and very deep, right? There's like 2 million of soul. 2 million soul in the JitoSOL Orca pool or something, right? And so previously, it's like, that would be a huge moat for JitoSOL, right? Previously, it would be like, yeah, that's like the deepest LST, right? And that's going to be like win it sort of like a positive feedback loop. Now, right, even if you're a tiny little LST who doesn't have a single Radium or Orca pool, that doesn't matter. You go through infinity from, so like one hop, HSOL to JitoSOL, and then JitoSOL to SOL via all of the ones that they have, you know, incentivized, right? And so you basically borrow someone's Niles, like borrow the liquidity from some other LST. But I mean, I don't think about it like this. I think about it as this massive unified, like grand unified pool of liquidity that's available for every single LST, and everyone benefits. Yeah.
No, that makes a ton of sense. And it's interesting. I haven't really heard it pitched that way before. So this is a first for me. I'm loving it. And at the lower layer though, the reserve layer, like what is the incentive for users to deposit, or like where does the liquidity come from, and what is the incentive to do so, to deposit into that reserve layer?
Yeah, so that reserve layer takes fees, right? So it's currently closed to public, so we sort of fund it. And I think, yeah, so that's currently closed to public. And you know, we fund it ourselves. But I think something that people don't know is that, people know, but maybe something that is like a little bit unintuitive is that the infinity pool is a superset of the reserve pool, because the infinity pool also holds SOL as an asset. So if the infinity pool, when the infinity pool gets big enough, right, it can basically supplant the infinity pool by just holding that amount of SOL, right? And so, you know, that pool becomes like the one pool to, you know, to rule them all, basically. We won't need like this whole separate pool idea. There are some concerns with that, because of course you have this cash drag, right? So if you are holding 200,000 SOL, that 200,000 SOL is by definition not making any returns, right? And so you'd have to balance that a while. But, you know, like if there are lots of trading fees coming in and out, then like this might be a this might be still profitable overall. Yeah.
So do the trading fees then go to the pool, a deposit? Like, yeah, I guess where do the trading fees earned and accrued in the Infinity pool? Where do those flow through to? Is that the split between the depositors?
To the protocol and the depositors. So nice. 10% to protocol, 90% to depositors. Yeah.
Perfect. And then on the other piece, so like running HSOL or these other partner protocols, is there any value accrual that flows back to the protocol? I'm curious what the business model there is for like allowing these other protocols to use the infrastructure.
Well, as in, are you talking about the benefit that accrues to Helios or?
The opposite, really. So like, Helios is used. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so it's a couple of things. So I wrote, way back in September or July, I think I wrote this document, right? Which is that we have two goals, right? Number one is to just basically just explode the percentage of liquid stake Sol on Solana, right? That's like step one. And step two, right? Capture all of that volume, of that comes from that Cambrian explosion of LSTs. So even if we don't take any fee on those LSTs, right? If I can get the proportion of LSTs from what was like for relatively like 4% and 4.5% when we started and now it's at 6%. If I can get that to 50%, right, and I can capture that trading volume, which at the time was 1 billion, but if you sort of 10x it, it becomes 10 billion. And if I can capture that 10 billion volume, that 10 billion trading volume and take 10 bips on that, or whatever, however many bips on that, then Sangnu can make like a ton of money, right? That alone. And of course, fee switch, I guess you can always turn it on. You can always put some sort of commission on the AUM and so on. But I mean, again, this is sort of far from my mind right now. Like to me, this is like early days. We're at like 6%, right? Like we can get to, why don't we get to 60% and then we'll talk about the, yeah. And I think even then we'll be eight digit sort of revenue figures, I think. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. And as far as, yeah, it's still such a grow the pie, part of the explosion here. There, it just doesn't make sense to kind of be over indexing on doing something else. Next question here is really, I think it's, so you mentioned decentralization a few times and the idea of like the protocol accruing fees, and you guys are also running Sanctum Wonderland right now. Talk to us a bit about like the design of this points program. And you intentionally took like a more, I don't know if gamified is the right word, but like a more fun spin on it. Talk to us a bit about the program.
Yeah. So Wonderland is we call it a user loyalty program. It's a points program, but I don't like to say this because like the thing that we got, the feedback that we continuously got was like, gosh, like please don't run a points program. I'm so fatigued. I'm going to throw up if I see another points program. Right. So that was like the thing that was, and we were like, okay, we don't want to do that. But at the same time, I think, points programs are good, right? Like for the protocol, they give you, they bring in users, a lot of interest, a lot of engagement, right? And it's a quantitative way to sort of at least track how much people have contributed to the protocol over time, right? So I think there are strong sort of reasons to run a points program, but we definitely did not want to do like yet another one, right? And so with Wonderland, instead of thinking about how can we maximize our metrics, the primary design goal is how can we make our users like have fun, right? How can we make our users feel like this joy and whimsical, and feel like, okay, like this new LST future is like so exciting and, let me be part of it. And so I think like a couple of design sort of choices, like deliberate design choices were made. One is of course the design of it, right? It's cute. We spent a lot of time on the art and just, making the bars, go up sort of thing. We don't take snapshots every 2 hours. We take them every 5 minutes, which is like a massive engineering challenge. But right, like that's required for the responsiveness of the UI to make it feel sort of like a lot more like fun and interactive. And then I think the other thing is that a lot of points program feels very PvP, right? It's like everybody's competing for your attention and, you have this fixed pot of cash to go into this and which one do you farm and so on. It's just, and
you know, as more users come in, you worry about being diluted and so on and so forth. Like, it's just not a great, and it, you're constantly worried about your rank going up and down. And it's just not a fun experience. But if you don't do it, you feel like you're missing out and so on. So again, trying to fix that a little bit, right? So we, like, instead of, you know, we could have easily done like just incentivizing INF, right? And we deliberately chose not to, even though it's a lot of effort, right? So we went to all the partners, most of which we tried, you know, to do like the art for them and also importantly to incentivize collecting all of them, right? So we have 18 in season one, right? And they, you know, there is no sort of additional incentive, but if you get 18, you get this little golden badge on your profile. And, you know, people love that, right? It's like, oh, man, I want to collect all these pets. And, you know, we made that bar very low. So like 0.1. You know, 0.1 of that LST, which is, you know, like maybe $15 or something like this, right? And just make sure like the bar is just really low so that everybody, not just the rich, can, you know, enjoy having that, you know, collecting that 18 pets. And of course, you know, we also try and push all of our partners, which is like, hey, like it's not just INF, right? Like all these partners are good choices to put and, you know, put your soul into. And I think that's our way of just trying to inject some much needed, like, you know, fun and levity and life into this points meta.
Yeah, the points meta is at a place where we absolutely need some life. Make points programs great again. There's no doubt about it. And I'll give you that. The blobs are cute. There is no doubt about it. So I love the spin on it. And it, you know, you're really trying to drive the user action of using the LSTs and getting liquidity in or getting deposits into these different LSTs. And I was also like the point of like, you know, it could have just been INF and it could have been boring and it could have been a leaderboard, but it's really nice to see a change of pace there. One thing we touched on earlier was sort of the winner take all dynamics. And I kind of want to take a back step onto it, because if we look at Ethereum, I think Lido has about called a 25% stake rate, and Lido has about 70% of the liquid staked market share. Mm-hmm. Do you think the liquidity issue that Ethereum has relative to Solana, for all the reasons we just discussed, is like the key driver of why the winner take all dynamics here are so much stronger?
Almost certainly, right? Because again, with ETH, you have this withdrawal queue. So nobody can, like, it is not possible to build that kind of infinity protocol that we built, right? It really isn't like an OPOS thing. Well, okay, maybe not. Like, maybe if I were like Ethereum, like super genius, I could probably find some way, but I don't think there is. And I think nobody has built it, right? And so there's this, like, it's this immense, like, PvP mode, that, like, it's this intense PvP environment and this like huge liquidity mode that Lido has. And I think like that's bad for a lot of reasons. Like one of them, of course, is, you know, we talk about like if Lido gets too big, then it's like a single plutocratic governance token controlled by, you know, a couple of VCs, a couple of people. And that is like basically able to halt the chain, basically. And that's like, it's horrendous, you know, that is like existential. You know, that might be a bit far-fetched, but I think much more possible and likely is that Lido gets very ossified and like you don't see any innovation, you don't see any competition, they start being really rent-seeking and nobody can really do anything about it because it's just so entrenched in all the fucking protocols across all of Ethereum, right? You know, and I think, you know, that's not where we want to get to with Solana. We don't want this winner-take-all thing. And well, thankfully, we have this, you know, the stake pool program was designed in such a way that you get back your stake account, which then allows, the other thing that also makes a difference is that the epoch is only about 2.5 days, right? Like if the epoch was 21 days, then this product would be a lot less viable. But you know, like those being the case, no slashing as well, maybe. But given all of these things, right, it means that a protocol like ours is a lot more, like it's possible. Right. And we are able to then supercharge innovation, because when the barrier for entry, to creating a new LST is not like a couple of million dollars from a VC, right? But it's like, oh, just talk to me and I spin it up for you in like a, you know, like a couple of hours and you don't need any money to do it. Then all of a sudden, like people can just try different things, right? Like all these validators, right, are trying new and different ways to build their brand, to get people to come, right? They're dropping like tokens, they're dropping SOL, they're putting in MAV rewards, right? Whatever, you know, maybe dropping NFTs, maybe, I don't know, but like they are now sort of like this Cambrian explosion of LSTs, which means lots of innovation, lots of healthy, friendly competition in the sense that, you know, you have to sing for your supper rather than build up this moat, right? Like that's that is like a lot better for the consumer. Like I don't know what fee Lido takes on Ethereum now, but when they came, I think they take a 10% of the staking returns. And to me, that is like insane. That is like that is like number one rent seeker, you know, and now people are almost paying you to, they're almost paying you to buy their LST. That's how crazy, like that's the difference between Solana and Ethereum.
Yeah. Lido is indeed still at 10% with 5% going to the DAO and the other 5 going to the validator operators. Yeah. So it is higher than the commissions we see on average.
Can you imagine that? Like a 10% tax on every single transaction on Ethereum? Like basically, right? Because, you know, ETH and stake ETH is like the bit. STF is like the bedrock, and it's like 10%. Like, I mean, it's a great, you know, great to be Lido, but like, I don't want that to happen on Solana. Yeah.
Another interesting key differentiator there would be the stake weighted QoS that Solana uses. And so it kind of creates this different landscape. So can you give us a quick primer on what stake weighted QoS is? We've done a lot of episodes on this. So for the listeners, there is a good resources to go pull from, but it could be a good intro if we get what is stake weighted QoS and how do you think that's going to shape this Solana staking landscape going forward?
Right. So the stake weighted QoS is a feature that tries to address the congestion that Solana has had, you know, over the past month or so. Right. And the idea is that a validator gets the right to send transactions to the leader proportional to the stake that it has over the network. And the idea is the idea is that if you have, you know, you're not able to like spam transactions, right? Like it's like a anti-Sybil measure, because previously without this, you can just spin up lots of different nodes with, you know, zero stake each and then spam the leader and sort of basically degrade the network for everybody else. And this is like a prophylactic against that. Yeah. So that's stake weighted QoS. I think we've seen over the past few weeks, protocols care a lot about landing their transactions, right? Jupiter, for example, Helios, for example, right? Drift as well, right? And all of them have started to set up their own validator to try and attract their own stake in order so that they can land transactions, when they need to. So for Jupiter, it's extremely important because, you know, for example, with the LFG, you have this big token launch, right, on the platform. You really do not want, you know, some sniper to come in and sort of take all of this up and then sort of dump it on the users. So it's very important for protocols to be able to, you know, land transactions when they can. Yeah. So we see this competition heat up, right? And that has been quite good for, you know, for us at Sanctum, because, you know, then they'll try and set up LSTs as well. I think there is some discussion about, you know, whether or not stake weighted QoS is like the right approach. There are some other ideas like whitelisting and so on, but, and validators, there are many good validators who are discussing this right now. But I think at the moment it's like a good enough solution. Yeah.
Yeah. And what I find super interesting about it is it creates yet another reason for, you know, if you're running a very successful business on Solana, you have an incentive to run a validator, which makes what you guys are doing at Sanctum even more interesting, right? Because if I'm, say, like I'm some large retail brand and I run something on chain on Solana, so I have this like popular brand, and running a validator makes my business better because I can get more transactions to the leader, you know. Now I'm like, okay, well, I would want to continue increasing that. So having my own LST seems like a fantastic way to do that. But FP, this has been a fantastic conversation. I've really enjoyed it. Maybe as a closing question here, to leave with the listeners, you know, what are a few key milestones or KPIs that, you know, you kind of intend to track, for Sanctum over the next 12 to 18 months?
Ooh, 12 to 18 months. that's a long time.
Or we can shorten it. All right, let's say 6 months.
That's good. I mean, I think the North Star for us is always, it's like, what's the percentage of sold as liquid stake, right? And there are some metrics about like TVL or dominance or whatever. Like I care less about that. I care a lot about how much of that sold is liquid stake. And in particular, I'm interested in the proportion of SOL that isn't staked now, but that could be staked, because and we've realized this That many people don't stake their soul. Like, there's still like 33% of the soul not being staked, and that's crazy. And so these people are usually sort of less sophisticated users, or like they're NFT holders and so on and so forth. And so like this represents to me a tremendous missed opportunity to try and convert this soul to stake soul, because that, you know, earns them yield, and also it helps to secure the network. It is good, right? So that's my North Star. And then like going a little bit even more speculative is like, I want to see like LSTs completely change in nature from what we think about them now, which is like a box in which you stake your soul and you get some yield back, which is, you know, stake pools and so on. That's like a Ethereum model. But to think about them as, you know, like basically I want everybody to have an LST. I want there to be like this circular Solana economy where you pay for things, like you pay for goods and services, not by giving USDC, but or you know, paying in fiat or whatever, but rather by just moving your soul into the LST of the person to pay for that good of service. And I want to see this circular soul economy where I hold your LST and you hold mine and you hold someone. And that's where value, real value, is created on Solana natively, as well as staying on Solana. Because the problem right now is that you have soul and you've got to get it out in order to do anything useful, right? Like, and so all of that is like speculative, right? And you have to take profit somehow. But if we can have an economy that where the value is created and captured, right, via the circular soul or like LST holdings, then I think like Solana can really become like the global currency. And maybe it would be even bigger than Bitcoin, right? And so like that is my like pie in the sky, you know, very long-term vision. But I think that's like super, super exciting. Yeah.
The bullish future is definitely a great place to leave off on. So thanks again, FP. We'll put some links to your Twitter and to the Sanctum docs and website as well in the show notes. Encourage everyone to go check them out. They're a great protocol building on Solana. But FP, thanks again. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very much.